Welcome to Global Talk, a foreign affairs podcast from the national newspaper in Abu Dhabi. A few weeks ago, I got in touch with Zayd Khalid Mahmoud, a 26-year-old from the Iraqi city of Mosul. Zayd fled Mosul when it was captured by ISIL in June 2014 and is now living in a Red Cross refugee camp in Belgium. His photo had been featured on a controversial Instagram account called Hot Migrants, which is exactly what you're thinking it is, and I wanted to hear what he thought about it for an article I was writing. But after speaking to Zayd and finding out a bit about his personal story and his difficult journey to Europe, I was interested in hearing more. And so he agreed to let me interview him for this podcast, explaining why he left Mosul, how he reached Europe, what his life is like now in Belgium, and what he would say to politicians about the refugee crisis if he had the chance. We spoke over Skype and the line can be a little bad at times, but please stick with us.
I had to leave Mosul because it had fallen and ISIS took control on the city. And it's funny, I literally saw the army troops running away with their Humvees or on foot. So for me, it wasn't really okay to stay.
Zayd said he had no option but to leave Mosul. He'd been a volunteer for elections in Iraq and was in a local band. Things that were not okay to ISIL.
Since they arrived to Mosul, they've been killing and executing hundreds and thousands of people within the city. So for me, I didn't gamble my life by staying there. So I left, and my family left before me, 3 days before I did. I had to leave everything behind me. I had to leave my education. I had to leave my job. I had to leave my music. And yeah, I just left. And I heard later that a lot of people that I know that are now with them, I don't know if they were forced. I don't know if they, because many were forced, many weren't. So you never guess who your true friends are. So you don't want to live in that society.
From Mosul, which is in northern Iraq, Zayd traveled to the semi-autonomous Kurdish region, which borders Turkey. Within days, he'd crossed over into Turkey, where he stayed for around a year and a month. He said he had wanted to leave Turkey much sooner, but first had to earn the several thousand dollars needed to get to Western Europe. He did this by working as an English teacher, something he had been training to do in Mosul.
I had to leave everything behind me. I mean, I could have sold my car, I could have sold something to arrange that kind of money. But it was like a sudden moment when you had to leave your country. It's not easy. I mean, it's not an easy decision. You just got to do it, you know?
The first stage of Zayd's journey, and the journey of most refugees trying to reach Western Europe, was to cross from Turkey to Greece on a boat provided by people smugglers.
We couldn't be caught by the police. I mean, if we get caught, they would deport us to Iraq, especially Iraqis. So I crossed finally. It was a really bizarre moment because at the sea point, we had to hide for nearly a day. And my first attempt failed. We were caught by the police and they confiscated all the stuff, like the boat, the whole engine. So I had arrested most of the people.
Zayd, however, managed to run away from the police without getting caught, and his second attempt at crossing to Greece was successful. The boat on which he made the journey was an inflatable raft, about 8 to 9 meters in length and with more than 50 people on board. He was forced to steer the boat himself after the people smugglers refused to travel with them.
And the weather was a bit windy. The tides and the waves were a bit high because it was almost a full moon at that time. I was scared as hell. Children were crying.
The sound on the recording becomes unclear here, but Zayd explained that they had to keep the children calm so that the Turkish Coast Guard wouldn't hear them and take them back to Turkey. About an hour and a half later, they landed in Mytilene, a city on the Greek island of Lesbos. From Lesbos, Zayd's journey to Belgium was an arduous one that involved crossing several borders and taking multiple buses, trains, a ferry, and walking miles on foot. To describe in detail would take an entire podcast, so I'll summarise a little here. After arriving at Mytilene, Zaid went to a refugee camp on Lesbos, where he registered and waited for a couple of days to receive a travel pass. This allowed him to buy a ferry ticket to Athens, the capital of Greece. He then travelled to the Macedonian border by bus and on foot. After crossing over into Macedonia, he took a train to Serbia, where he stayed for around 2 weeks. Zaid told me that there were two main obstacles on his journey across Europe. The first was the sea crossing from Turkey to Greece, and the second was getting into and through Hungary. He crossed the Serbian-Hungarian border with a group of other people willing to cross without the help of smugglers, but they soon ran into trouble.
And we crossed, and we were spotted by the Hungarian policemen and army, and I ran away. Naturally, and I saw my friends were beaten by sticks. They were like brutal, the Hungarian army and policemen. They hated refugees, I don't know why. And I just ran away, wandered in the woods for a couple of nights, and went to the highway, tried to find with a group of people. We were like three. And we found a car.
They paid the man in this car to take them to the Hungarian capital, Budapest, where Zaid stayed a couple of nights before catching a train to Vienna, the capital of Austria.
It was like really a moment of relief to reach Austria, because you don't want to get caught in, you don't want to get stuck in Hungary.
From Vienna, Zaid took a train to Munich in Germany before traveling on to Brussels, the capital of Belgium. He said he arrived there on about the 9th or 10th of September last year. Was Europe and now Belgium what you thought it would be when you were leaving Iraq and you had this idea of Europe in your head? Has it been what you thought it would be?
Well, I was expecting better hospitality because people were like telling that if you will reach, they will provide you with a house, they would give you lots of money. And I mean, Belgium is a small country, really small. It's even smaller than my city, smaller than Mosul. But the huge amount of people in Belgium, I mean, those guys were like shocked and panicked. They didn't know where to put all those people. They were like all of a sudden building new centers for refugees. So the Red Cross is really working good here. I've been in the camp for nearly 6 months, and everything is good. I mean, it can be better, but you know, it's that what they can do. I think it's their capability of absorbing that huge number of people.
Zaid said he has tried to make lots of friends in Belgium and tries to leave the camp regularly because if you stay there too much, you will get depressed. You will always hear sad stories and people just waiting.
The thing that kills them is the whole waiting thing. And for me, without my music, without my friends here in Belgium, I would just get depressed and die of depression.
Part of the problem seems to be a lack of consistency in the asylum process, which involves two interviews. Zaid told me that after the second interview, they are supposed to find out whether or not their asylum application has been successful, but it's not always that simple.
And some people have been waiting for a reply after the second interview for a month. Some people just a week. Some people like 10 months and nothing happened. You know, so the whole waiting thing kills them.
While refugees are waiting for their asylum claims to be processed, they are not able to work or study in the traditional sense. Zaid has been given a permit to teach guitar lessons in the camp and is learning French, but until he is granted asylum, will not be able to continue with the studies that he was forced to leave behind in Mosul.
The most important thing that I lost after my family is my education. Nobody would consider me as a teacher here or anywhere because I don't have any certificate. So this thing is really important for me. I mean, imagine you go to college, you study for 4 years, and you just need the paper. You finished everything. You just need a paper that says that you are a graduate. And we couldn't have that because of ISIS.
How does it feel not being able to work or study now?
Well, I feel like I'm not a human. I feel like the exact opposite of me, because for me, I always loved to work. I always loved to study. I had lots of luxurious. I had lots of things in my life. I had a car. I had a simple life, or like any person would have a house, a TV, a job. Even if not a job, it's friends, you know. But when I first came here, I made an interview with some young journalists, and the first thing that I asked them is, do you know where can I find a guitar? And they were like laughing, like they were saying everyone is looking for clothes, food, shelter, and you look for a guitar. I told them, yeah, I mean, if I have a guitar now, it will like really make me feel better, because I lost lots of guitars on my journey traveling from Iraq to Turkey and then to here. I mean, it would look stupid for me to cross on the sea holding a guitar, because people are dying and I'm holding a guitar.
Do you ever think that you'll go back to Mosul one day?
Well, to be honest, no. I mean, your city or my city is with its people. How can I explain it? Like, Mosul to me was my family, my friends, and my college, and my work. Those four things. So I lost those in Mosul, and I don't think they will ever go back to Mosul. It's not my place now.
How do you feel about the way refugees coming to Europe are being portrayed in the media?
I know some of the media are showing that refugees are bad, especially some events happened in Germany and Belgium about refugees stole, refugees raped someone. And when you say refugees, don't say refugees. I mean, bad people are everywhere. And you don't expect us to be all angels. I mean, the majority, I can say they are the good guys. Because if they were not good, they would not leave their countries. No, nobody is that desperate enough to leave for no reason. Like I explained, the whole journey is really like hell. It took me like almost a month. And when I explained it in brief, it seemed like a fairy tale, or a journey, like a simple one, like a happy journey. No, it wasn't. It was really tough, and people died on that journey. So people should respect that. Yeah, some of the media tried to show refugees are like, yeah, this is the true refugees. This is what Muslims are. They are thieves. They are killers. They are barbarians. They are, you know, like, yeah, uncivilized. So if you don't know about refugees a lot, try to pay a visit. It won't cost you a lot. Try to, you know, speak with them, communicate with them. You will really know that, you will find out that just like you, you know, humans like you.
And what would you like to say to the politicians in Europe who are making decisions about refugees, if you could?
Politicians?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to say that they're controlling our fate. They're controlling our life. I mean, if they make a general decision that all refugees should be, you know, should go back, we don't want them. So mostly the refugees, they don't have anywhere to go, you know. They don't have a country. They need someone to provide asylum for them. I mean, for me, I don't want to stay here in the camp. I mean, I can be a productive member, more than Belgium, lots of Belgians. I can work. I can practice teaching easily if you allow me. If you give me a work permit, I would just work. I would be a giving member. I would not be a consumer. And this society needs us, because it needed immigrants before. This country was built by immigrants. And to some politicians, let's say the United States, what Donald Trump been saying about Muslims, yeah, he's trying to copy, I think, Hitler, when he was like, I want to do a Muslim ID thing for Muslims. Yeah, those guys are terrorists. And all Arabs. He doesn't know the difference between Arabs and Muslims. I mean, I don't really think he knows. But really, I mean, his country also was built by immigrants. So if you have like a house of glass, Don't throw stones at other people.
Before I end this podcast, it's important to point out that I spoke to Zaid just before the European Union and Turkey implemented a deal on March 20th, under which all refugees who arrive in Greece illegally will be sent back to Turkey unless they apply for asylum in Greece. This effectively blocks refugees from travelling on to any other countries in Europe, and it's unlikely Zaid would have made it to Belgium today under these conditions. He said that when he made the trek to Western Europe last August and September, it was almost like it was legal. Throughout much of the journey, he was waved on and helped by police, soldiers and officials. But that is no longer the case. As part of the EU-Turkey deal, the EU has said it will resettle a Syrian refugee from Turkey for every Syrian sent back from Greece. But this one-for-one deal excludes refugees of other nationalities, including Iraq. You can read our online coverage of Europe's refugee crisis by visiting thenational.ae/world. And you can follow us on Twitter @thenatworld. Thanks for listening.